Out of the Park Developments is proud to announce Out of the Park Baseball 19, the newest sports strategy game from the award-winning Out of the Park Baseball franchise, will be officially released on March 22nd, 2018 on PC and Mac, but you can pre-order it today to get a 10% discount plus 3 days of early access. Out of the Park Baseball 19 is purpose-built for fans of the series, including loads of new features and improvements. Brand new 3D visuals and player animations make games come alive like never before. Ultra-realistic AI powers the best in-game and season-long behavior, and a brand new tournament mode lets you pit any teams from any time throughout the history of baseball against others in completely customizable brackets, and that is just the tip of the iceberg. So go to ootpdevelopments.com today to pre-order Out of the Park Baseball 19 for just $35.99, a 10% discount off the full retail price, plus you get that 3 days of early access. So make your move today with Out of the Park Baseball 19. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Madden NFL 06 is memorable for a number of reasons. It marked the transition to, at the time, next-gen of hardware, beginning with the Xbox 360. It was the first game released following the acquisition by EA of the exclusive league license. There was an infamous trailer, which sent consumer expectations into the stratosphere. And ultimately, the entire development process and the final result was maybe a little bit troubled. Former lead designer for the Madden series, Ian Cummings, was, I believe, an associate producer on Madden 06 as the title. Thanks to a recent article acting as a postmortem of sorts by Glixel, which is a video game vertical from Rolling Stone, we're going to revisit that release and everything that led up to it now. Over 12 years later, which is pretty hard to believe. Ian, thanks for joining me and Rich here on this episode of the Press Row Podcast. Excited to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, it's kind of this is a memory I enjoyed forgetting. This is hard to go back over again. Not fun.
Yeah, we bring it back because we want to raise those bad memories, Ian. It's what we do here on the Press Row Podcast, Rich. We try to make people uncomfortable and have as little pleasure as possible. All right, Ian. So, you know, it's really interesting, I think, from a consumer's perspective and from our perspectives here to get kind of a inside look at the development behind the games, because we really don't get that insight at any point, at least surrounding their releases. Here we are 12 years later, and we finally get to hear some interesting stuff that went on in relation to Madden 06, which is a release that's looked back on for, like I said, a number of different reasons. It's memorable, maybe for the wrong reasons, but there's a lot of people put a lot of effort into making that game. And there are a lot of people who had high expectations for it, and maybe unreasonably so. But that was also, you know, part of the fault of the studio, as I'm sure we'll talk about later. So take us back to, I guess, 2004, when you started working on that game. You started transitioning over from the PS2 to the Xbox 360.
Yeah. Boy, if I can think about this, this is... this has been a while.
Yeah.
And also, just I got sent this article before I even start. That do you guys know about the Hard Times, that website? Anyway, it's a parody website, kind of like the Onion or ClickHole. Okay. But this article, just the headline is "Designing Video Games is Hard Work, but the Millions of Angry Players Make It All Worthwhile." and so that's where I've been back to sitting again, remembering all this kind of stuff. I remember I became an assistant producer on Madden 04. So that assistant producers back then basically just meant designer. And so on Madden 04, the Vic cover, and Madden 05, which was Ray Lewis cover. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The year the hit stick, that whole, those two I was basically designer on. And somewhere in the development during 05, Madden 05, I would say maybe it was just a couple of months in, they spun off a team to start working on next gen, the 360 version, trying to be way out in front of it, super early hardware. And super secretive, like a lot of people couldn't go look at it or see anything. If I remember right, it was mostly just graphics engineers, and then, you know, maybe one or two designers, and there were some people that got hired in from 2K. There were some people that got hired in from Disney. There was just kind of like a brand new team, if I remember right, with a couple of veterans mixed in, sort of starting off concept, while the rest of us stayed on 05 and finished it. And that was a pretty hard year, Madden 05, in terms of just hours worked and that kind of stuff. But that was obviously a great year. One of the best, if not the best Madden that I remember.
Yeah, and Metacritic would back you up on that. It was 91%. Yeah,
it was just so much stuff in there. I mean, it's piled in, and then you had 2K on the other side that was piling stuff in. It was just a really crazy year. And so after 05 was done, you know, now we're basically about 9 months to a year. No, I guess it would be a little over a year till 06. You know, the production had sort of begun on the 360 version, so then they took about half of us from, you know, the console PS2 version over to next gen. And, you know, some people, basically core people, stayed that they knew would do, you know, feature development to do another PS2 version. And then, you know, it didn't feel like it was any kind of like a dream team move or anything like that. It was more or less just like half the people went, half the people stayed. And yeah, when I got over to the team, they had, you know, a stadium, I think, rendered at like, you know, the 500,000 polys detail level. And I think that was about it. You know, it was just, but like that alone was pretty stunning. You know, the stadium people had gotten to work on these super high res models, and that was sort of where it was. And I think there were maybe like little 3D grass demos, little demos of 3D crowd, kind of random tech that had been going on. Mm-hmm. And then there was nothing done in the actual game. You know, it was still just really tech. And this is only now you're getting close to a year from launch. And there were like thousands of game design documents written. I mean, just you would not believe so many documents. Like just every idea for a game ever was in this big design database, you know. And at first they had me like, you know, trying to sign off on those or, you know, do templates or write my own. If I remember right, I definitely remember writing emotion tracking for celebrations type systems, you know, just tons of really in-depth. Instead of like, if you score a touchdown, you play celebration. It was more or less an emotional meter or something per player that would dictate how they celebrated. I don't know. So there was a lot of like really crazy things going on. And then I had done motion capture direction on a couple of maybe one or two shoots before. And so then a big part of 06 was going to be every animation reshot and recaptured. So I then had to start planning motion capture shoots. And I spent the better part of that year in Vancouver doing shoots. And we would do 2 or 3 week shoots at a time, come back for 3 weeks and then do another one. So it was just like every single move over again, as well as tons of really in-depth design of what kinds of moves we were going to do that we weren't doing before on PS2. You know, player specific cut moves, player specific everything, throwing styles. It was just, you know, kind of like 10 times what PS2 had. All of the animation ideas were getting captured too. So yeah, that's how my year started when I joined. The long-winded story there.
So I want to, something doesn't add up in the piece. And I don't mean to say that all of the facts stated are not true. But what I mean is when I read the article and then I look at the game, the game is not a terrible game. I mean, Madden, this was not a dysfunctional football game riddled with bugs in anything close to a non-playable state, right? It didn't do that well on Metacritic, but I mean, it wasn't an unmitigated disaster. Yet when I'm reading this, Ian, and you are walking up to executives sleep deprived, saying it's not going to happen, it's all over, and then collapsing into a heap like 2 weeks before shipping. And the game that shipped, because I was waiting outside a Walmart in Edison, New Jersey, the day the Xbox 360 came out, and I was lucky enough to get a spot on a line and had to wait for like 9 hours till I could get it, and walked away with one, as well as a copy of Madden. I remember putting the game in and being disappointed, but certainly not like, oh my gosh, this is trash, right? So like, it wasn't quite as bad. So like, I don't know, is the story exaggerated a little bit, or did something magical happen in that last 2 weeks to get that out there?
No, it definitely was that bad. I mean, I used to have a video for the longest time, I don't know where it went, of the game, you know, around that time. And it was just unbelievable. I mean, like, the whole game was pink. You know, no rendering worked.
But
no,
you mean before shipping, though, not
yeah,
the ship
this
game. Okay.
This is just weeks before. So it was in horrific shape. We pushed the ship date as far as we could. And it was just an absolute slog. I mean,
it came out at launch, right? It was like in November when it.
Yeah, but
I
think they were shaving time off of shipping. They were shaving time off of approvals. They were shaving, you know, they were shaving time off of packaging. Everywhere they're trying to, you know, get a little extra week, an extra day. You know, do a submission in the middle of the night because, you know, the next morning the QA team's going to check it. So as you well know, these tactics. But yeah, it was absolutely a miracle that it came together at the end. Like I said,
How did the miracle happen?
I mean, I think Tiburon, despite all of that growing pains, there at the time was full of rock stars. I mean, just magicians. And I mean, especially a lot of the graphics engineers, a lot of the gameplay engineers. I mean, it's just, they're unbelievable. They're really great. And so when back against the wall and sleep deprived and everything, still like failure was not really an option. At that time, Tiburon was a very proud culture, you know, that year knocked it down a peg. But, before then it was, you know, no, we were untouchable. So it was a lot of that hubris got us through the end for sure.
You know, of course, there is the controversy of the trailer, which also remains nebulous in the story. And I don't want anyone to name names; it doesn't even matter. But you know, I'm curious your reaction and your memory of that whole thing, because I was at E3 that year, and I won't tell the story yet, but I will tell it in a few minutes. I was at E3 the year when that trailer was at E3, and this game, Madden, or something resembling it, was at E3 as well. What's your memory and reaction, and what do you know about that whole trailer, you know, which is explained and everybody has known forever was not the gameplay. It was what somebody wanted the gameplay to be. You know, walk me through that.
Yeah, that, you know, got made again before I joined the team. That was like sort of that core concept team trying to drum up, you know, what does next gen Madden look like, you know, at a top level. If you go back and watch it, there's a lot of like little details that, you know, the concept team at the time was hinting that the gameplay would also have, you know. And so I think that was the point. It was the trailer, but of ideas to show that it might work. Like if you notice, like when the guy dives across the end zone, like a 3D grid is broken, you know, like an infrared beam. So there were things like that. Like the game should have an infrared beam that tells you when a touchdown goes off. You know, there's sort of like tech ideas there. And so in terms of like Gourlay, who was in the interview as well and gave a bunch of great quotes and is super smart guy, I don't remember what he remembered there of the trailer being accidentally released to the public. Now, if he heard that, I don't know if that was through the grapevine or maybe I wasn't in the know, but I was under the impression that was just, you know, absolutely a concept piece that they wanted to release. I think EA probably would have preferred to put it out as this is a concept piece and then been able to show real gameplay. But they never were able to, so they could never do anything but show that.
right. You know, Good point. You know, there was no gameplay to give them. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool to be like, hey, here's our concept trailer of Red Dead Redemption. And then in a few weeks, we'll give you the real thing and you'll like that too. But there was never a follow up. So
Well, Ian, what did that do within the studio at the time when the trailer came out and you saw people taking it as kind of what they were going to expect the game to be? Did that increase the pressure you felt? Did it really push people beyond, or were they upset about it? Like, this is not what we're going to get to.
Yeah, I don't remember it being negative. The timeline to me is what's foggy, because I feel like it came out way before E3. And people had seen it, like, on TV as some commercial, if I remember
Might have been the E3 before. I don't know. Like, I was at an
E3. It was definitely not a year away. I mean, I remember they were showing it there, but they also had another E3 trailer that we made at the last second that I remember that was Sean Alexander. That was more what was on loop at E3, because that was, like, current gameplay render versus the sizzle, you know, concept video. But no, I don't... First of all, I don't think any news ever got back to the team that gamers were expecting this versus expecting something else. I mean, I think it was just a cool concept piece. They showed it at a company meeting to everyone for the first time, and everyone's like, cool, all right, you know, looks neat. I don't think anyone ever thought, well, how's the gameplay camera angle work? I mean, when you have all these, you know, I don't think anyone was even thinking about it like that. They just probably thought of it as a marketing sizzle piece. And I mean, it's just really I don't think it's anybody's fault that they released it. They didn't have anything else to show. So, like, if people on the team were mad that got released and it showed a game that was not achievable, I mean, you're only mad because you didn't achieve it. I mean, you could have done stuff like that, but it just everything fell apart. So,
well, I wonder now, and I think you'll appreciate this question, is like, how would things have been different if Twitter existed? There were forums,
or direct lines to developers. Yeah, right.
there were
I don't think it would be that different. Yeah. It wouldn't be that different. I mean, you know, the majority of people that are decision making at EA aren't going to listen to community members on something like that. You know, so they would have probably gotten more heat from it, from the trailer coming out, but it also would have come with just as much hype. I mean, I think at the time, if you weren't a hardcore player, it just seemed like, yeah, it's a new console. It's going to look awesome. It'll look sort of like that. I don't think anybody was thinking it was impossible to do. I mean, all of the models and the animations are janky. And it's got really nice, you know, nighttime snow. But that was achievable. I mean, you know, Gears of War looked just as good as that or better, you know. So I don't think it was.
Yeah, you know, I remember you know, it was not so much the trailer at the time. Of course, that's what everybody remembers. But I believe that, I don't know who it was at EA, made a comment that they were actually, this was accompanied the video that came out, is that they were actually exceeding what was in the trailer. And I think that was, you know,
that'll do it.
People don't remember that part of it. But I think at the time, that's probably what set it off even more than just the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think E3 is where just everyone found out that it wasn't real.
Yeah, so. You know, I think I was at that E3 because I vaguely remember the Sean Alexander thing, and I think somebody showed me in at the time it was Questfield, now CenturyLink.
Yeah.
Oh. I think somebody zoomed into a press box and showed me a microwave or something like that, and that was kind of like the excitement about the game at the time.
It was behind closed doors too.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was. I remember that well. That's the story I was referencing earlier. So I at E3 the day before, I had met a person who became a good buddy of mine, Michael Rapar. I've told the story. He's the one who eventually got hired by Games Radar, who gave me, you know, my freelance gig, which sort of opened this whole thing. But that's how I got behind closed doors for that same demo. Jeremy Stein is the one who gave me the demo. Jeremy Stein, who has been on this show many times, you know, FIFA expert, good, you know, friend of the show. And so, like, that was what the demo was. And me, I mean, it was a great demo as long as you didn't care about football. And I didn't, because it was such a cool demo. It was like, hey, look, here's Sean Alexander. Look at the mesh of his jersey. Look at the detail on that. And then they went out
there. Yeah. Yeah, around skin, the stadium, everything. Yeah,
seat.
It looked great. Yep. You know, his character model looked pretty good.
I walked away from that demo blown away, not thinking to myself for one second, "Huh, I wonder how the football is," because I just assumed it would be PS2 plus football.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, right.
It's funny. It wasn't even just Madden like that. I remember the NBA Live presentation. It was just Dwayne Wade, and they were doing
sweating
facial expressions.
Yeah,
sweat.
He was just sweating. Yeah.
And it's like, it's like nifty, and it's easy to wow in that context of an event. But yeah, little did we know at the time what the actual state of the games were.
Yeah, no one was ready. I mean, that's for sure. I don't mean what at launch was good, you know.
It sure seems it seems that EA in particular has learned a lot of lessons, because nothing close to this happened. I guess the only correlate you could draw to this, Brian, would be the PS4/Xbox One launch of NHL, which, you know, had a significantly less to do in the game than every other version for the past, you know, 5 to 10 years. But it seems like, for the most part, EA learned their lessons with the next console generation, because...
Well, it's not really a generation, though. I mean, all these games still work. You know, it's not like you have to change from C to C++ or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd agree. I mean, maybe they have, but like NBA, I would see, is kind of an example of how they haven't really learned their lesson.
Well, that was less of a console change than just a reboot, unnecessary and unfortunate.
There was one in the middle of it, right? I mean, I think they were prepping for a PS3 game, and then it transitioned underneath them, and then they rebooted to say, oh, we're going to use the hardware, you know, better. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, there hasn't been this crazy jump. I mean, all of the new consoles aren't
that
quite of the jump in terms of tech, really, than the others. I mean, obviously, way more powerful, but I think the games are still built the same way, where EA basically switched everything going from PS2 to 360.
Yeah, we're seeing that now. It's more incremental now. It's you got the Xbox One, and you got the Xbox One X, both of which play the same games. You got the PS4 and the PS4 Pro, both of which play the same games, but the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X can deliver better visuals, better frame rates, faster load times, but you're still playing the same game. And you know, that's what we always go back to, is are we going to get to like a subscription-based future rather than console generations? And I think, you know, that's kind of a transition we're starting to see in that regard.
Question for you, Ian. Do you look back on that whole experience as something that you ultimately professionally benefited from, or do you look back on that as like, you know, nothing good came from that, it was awful, I can't even?
No, I mean, of course I learned a ton. I mean, it was at some point I was managing like 100 people and schedules, and then obviously doing motion capture and animation and gameplay. I mean, it was like there's so many fires to put out every day. So I grew a ton. I learned a ton. But the balance of work and life were non-existent, you know? So, lucky I didn't have kids before that.
Yeah.
There's no way I would have made it.
That was your kid at the time.
Yeah, that was my baby for sure. Well, for a long time, Madden was my baby, good 10 years. I don't look back on it fondly at all. It was pretty miserable for the majority of it. For sure, it got me over the hump of all kinds of things, and it taught me a ton too. You know, as I've gone in my career, to things not to do or the things to do. There were still some things that went right, albeit small. I think it was worth it, sort of.
what would you say is the best thing that came out of Madden 06? Whether it's a technology that you introduced or something that grew from there that maybe we're seeing materialize more in the recent years?
Oh man. I mean, internally, that is actually a good question, because I don't know if there are any. I hate to be the negative one there, but I think the long-term animation stuff that has happened within EA as a whole, maybe that had something to do with Madden, but I mean, really, that was a FIFA initiative that started getting pushed out from other spots. And then you see Frostbite and how everyone wants to jump on it. And those types of things, I guess, started around that era where it was like people have got to start sharing code because these games are too big. But I don't think, you know, Madden drove that or anything. It was just a lot of textbook examples of what not to do. And we didn't know any better, but it just like, it just way too much scope in not enough time with a lot of moving parts and variables that we didn't control.
All right. Well, Ian, you know, it was awesome talking with you and revisiting, a sore spot from your past.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah,
well, you remind him of the top and the bottom. Couldn't let it go.
Maybe one day we'll talk about what would you consider your jewel of your time there, other than, you know, once maybe you became lead designer, was it Madden 10? Because that's what I look back on as probably the height of Madden, at least in that particular generation.
Yeah, I mean, even though I didn't have as much say or anything, I still, the golden years for me were Madden 04 and Madden 05. 04 probably was my favorite. Even though 05 was probably a better game, 04 was the first year I was designing things, you know, the Playmaker control and Mike Vick.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you responsible for that?
I mean, all of us were, but, you know, yeah. He was just such a game breaker.
Literally.
And we played every day trying to figure out what to do. And that year I was doing a lot of playbook design. And so Vic came into the office. We put his plays in. And then we had like four or five defensive coordinators come and tell us what they do to game plan against them. You know, none of that stuff ended up making it into 04. It made it to 05. So that's why it was like, oh, QB spy? Oh, yeah, you probably do need that. So, but those were just the golden years. I mean, it was just a lot faster to make features and ideas come to fruition, you know, owner mode and all the like fun little random details that we got to do with that. And then the gameplay engine was just obviously not a super physics based one, but just the most fun, like really well balanced. And that was the hardest part about 06, was just like losing all of that great stuff that we had. And in my opinion, I mean, even I don't know, whenever I left Madden 12, I still didn't feel as happy with the gameplay as I did when I was there on 05.
So what are you working on now, Ian? You want to plug your projects?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to. You guys,
no.
the crossover between you guys and my little horse racing game is usually slim. But yeah, I still have a horse racing game in the App Store. It's been 2.5 years now since I built it myself, and now I've grown a little company around it. So we're continuing to work on horse racing. Like last year, our game engine was used in the Triple Crown broadcasts as the simulation. So it's just a little random niche that I'm pretty stoked about having, you know. So we're staying in it. We're already prepping for the Derby. And
that's big time.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't know that. That's fantastic. Congratulations. I mean,
yeah, thanks.
That's so good because, I mean, look, you know, I work with Out of the Park Developments and our simulations get used by MLB Network and 538. That's a really cool thing to be able to do that. That you created something that, as far as I know, didn't exist, right? Like, you know, Out of the Park's been around for 20 years, but there were other, you know, baseball strategy games and simulation things. I can't think of one that came before you. That's pretty amazing.
There's been plenty of horse racing games, but no one ever knows about them. And, you know, I kind of like that. Yeah. You can make a little business that doesn't like piss too many people off and make it super competitive and still make a nice little, you know, tiny empire for yourself. So yeah, still working on that photo finish, and I think there'll be something coming soon, and I'll hit you up once it's ready.
Excellent. Can't wait.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Ian Cummings, for coming on again, and we look forward to having you back in the future.
You bet.
Rich Grisham and I, we're now joined by TJ Lowerman. Some of you, probably all of you, will know him as That Sports Gamer. Rich, let's start off, though, talking about something that happened in your life recently, something that happened in the lives of many fans of the Philadelphia Eagles, and I guess it also affected New England Patriots, but we won't worry about them for now. You have finally seen the Eagles win a Super Bowl, Rich, something that even going back a few months, you pretty clearly you never thought would happen.
No, I never thought it would happen. I am not going to sit here, Brian Weedye and TJ Larim, and say, I told you this was going to happen. No, I never thought this was going to happen. I've been a fan of this team for almost 40 years. I have been to many dozens of games at times, not time. At times, I have been a season ticket holder. This is like many, 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 many people, just a longtime fan of this franchise that could never win a Super Bowl. They just could not do it. And they finally did it. And the way that they did it was inspirational and amazing. And I'm blown away. I've never seen a Philadelphia Eagles football team do what this team did. I don't know if you, Brian, if you watched the Inside the NFL episode from this after the Super Bowl. I don't know if you ever watched it. I forget that I have Showtime and I don't watch it, but I've watched it the last couple, you know, where they have the game footage from taken from the field. It's just really good. That whole team was just cool and composed and executing and fighting and just being like any other, being unlike any other Philadelphia Eagle team ever. It's just unbelievable. And for once to have your team be that team you always had beat you, the team with the great offensive line, the team that understood time of possession, the team that would not make stupid mistakes that would cost it games, to turn around and finally have that be your team and do what they did was just unbelievable. I am just so happy and so blown away by what this team did. It's just astounding. And to do it with the weight of that, you know, the weight of never winning a Super Bowl, the weight of not having any championship since 1960, that's a lot to carry on your shoulders. And to overcome that in one of the, you know, most ridiculous football games ever, not the most ridiculous Super Bowl, just any football game, most yards ever, just the way that it came to be was just astounding. And Brian, you know what it's like when you pour your heart and your soul into a football team and they don't win a championship. And when they finally do, you know exactly how that feels. It's just unlike any other feeling. It's awesome.
Yeah, and for me, it was my whole life, and not just the Seahawks. It was the city of Seattle. You know, we didn't, in my lifetime, we had not won. Now, the Huskies did win or shared a national title when I was like 12 years old. But other than that, we very much felt like we were cursed or something. And I, at certain points, I believed it's just never happened in my lifetime. What really is remarkable to me, Rich, is like how razor thin these things are, because with the Seahawks that year, if Richard Sherman doesn't get his hand on the pass late in the fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game that deflects for an interception,
absolutely,
you know, maybe they don't go to Super Bowl. I don't get that championship. We don't get that championship. With you, it was the Falcons game. They were right there at the goal line.
Yes. I was just going to say, if Matt Ryan completes that ball to Julio Jones, it's all over right there in the first divisional round at home.
And all your predictions, Rich, all year long about how miserable the team was would have come true. You would have been right.
Well, remember, this year, Brian, I've been good because this team has been good from the beginning. It's past years where I behaved badly. I have not been.
No, I saw some of your tweets, Rich, like 5 minutes into the first quarter, you were giving up on him. I'm like, Rich. Yeah. And then they come back and like win in a blowout fashion. I'm like, Rich.
I was allowed to voice my opinion. But this year, this team has been amazing from the get-go. The one game that really bothered me was the one game that really bothered everybody, and that was the one in Seattle, Brian. That was where they just came out and were not.
What team doesn't have one of those every year, though, Rich?
They do. But again, now that they've won this Super Bowl, it's all worth it. It's all good. It's the five-year grace period. You know, it's the Gus Ramsey theory, the five-year grace period. Oh, you know,
I would have liked that, Rich, but then I had the next Super Bowl.
That's hard. That's hard.
That would have been so much more difficult if they hadn't won the year before. Like, yes. I look back and I think about how, everybody called it, you know, the worst way to lose a Super Bowl ever, the worst way to lose a championship ever, and it probably was. And then here we are, what was it, 2 years later, and the Falcons go down in a more agonizing fashion, and that franchise didn't have the Super Bowl from the year before to fall back on. So like, it's weird. Sports are crazy, man.
It is. It's razor thin, Brian. And that's what makes it that much more. Because everybody is rightly saying that this Eagles team is lined up for success in the future. And they're right. But you know what? They could also not win another one, right? Like, this year,
to get that one is really hard. And now that they got it, yeah, I mean, I could see, you know, this becoming a, you know, a 2 or 3 year run here with a, you know, a run, right? I'm not going to say, oh, they're going to win 2 or 3 more Super Bowls, but clearly they're going to be a good team because they can overcome injuries at every, you know, key position almost and still win a Super Bowl, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're losing some coaches. They're losing DeFilippo, and they might lose Reich, you know, and things are going to change, and some guys are going to have to get let go, unfortunately, because that always happens. But either way, they're going to be good for a while, but who cares? They want it. They want it, and it's just so great. And I've been enjoying every minute of it. It's just awesome.
I'll tell you, the favorite part of it for me was not even just that night. It was the feeling of elation, just like relief also, that came in like the 6 to 8 months after it. You ride that high for that long. It really is not about just, all right, time to move on. It sits with you. It stays with you. And that was my favorite part about it. Until the next season, or until, like, after the first week of the next season started, it just, that feeling was amazing.
So yep. I'm glad you got to experience it. And today was the parade. Yep. And today was a parade, and I didn't go. Didn't want to go. It's fine. A lot of my friends, well, not a lot of my friends. Well, I mean, a lot of my friends did go. A bunch of my coworkers went. You know, there was a lot of people there. It went great. There was no problems. The city knows how to throw a championship parade. They did it back in 08 when the Phillies won it. So it doesn't happen often, but when it does happen, it's gone well. And it's just great. Again, one of the things I said in the last couple episodes is to also, I live in the region. I'm not near Philadelphia, but, you know, I'm in the Philadelphia TV market, right? And then I work in a suburb of Philadelphia. So it's also fun to be there, you know, physically in that location. It adds something to it, right? Like, I'm a big Alabama fan, but I live in New Jersey. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not surrounded by Alabama fans. That just adds a little bit to it as well, Brian. I mean, like, just, you know, today I'm driving home on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and most of the billboards were congratulating the Eagles from various sponsors and the NFL and stuff. Like, I'm just driving home thinking, this is amazing. I've never seen anything like this.
And what you'll see also, and this is something I loved about it, is you're on the road a lot. So if you're wearing an Eagles hat or something, Rich,
yeah,
like, you will, like, people recognize each other for that. I went to Disneyland and a few other places in California later that month that they won the Super Bowl. And it was nothing but walking and just randomly hearing people yell "Go Hawks" and high-fiving, you know, strangers,
yeah,
and like Seahawks jerseys all over Disneyland. It was freaking cool. Like, that's one of my best memories ever. So,
and again, I mean, not to belabor it anymore, I know we got a show to get to.
Yeah,
but it was also just so much fun how they did it. They were unbelievable. Like, the way that they did it. You know, these weren't winning ugly. These were, I mean, I've never seen, I don't know, the two games in a row, the NFC Championship Super Bowl, they were just unstoppable on offense. Boy. I've never
Going to the playoffs, you would not have thought that based on how they finished the regular season.
It was impossible. Yeah. It was, and the Atlanta game was not good either.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, it was just stunning. Absolutely stunning, unprecedented, ridiculous.
Oh, it's cool. Awesome. I always love, if it's not going to be the Seahawks, I like to see the underdogs win, so I'm happy. They were the literal underdogs, adopted that persona, and still, Rich, I haven't seen the photo of you wearing a dog mask while sitting with your cat. I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah. Well, you'll get one day, but I don't have a dog mask. Do have the cat, but not the dog mask.
All right. TJ Lowerman is still with us, I believe. TJ, how you been, man?
Still alive here. Very excited to see what the Eagles do this offseason now that they have two quarterbacks. I say we trade that one guy to the Browns for literally everything they have. And go Foles.
Wow. You want to trade Wentz, huh? Not Foles.
Yeah, man. Do it.
Wow.
Get two first-rounders this year and next year's first-rounder.
I wonder with DeFilippo leaving to the Vikings if Foles doesn't end up in Minnesota. I don't know. But anyways, TJ, what have you been spending your time doing? Rich has been busy winning championships. What have you been doing?
Recently, I've been getting kicked in the leg a lot in UFC. What is this? UFC 3?
Your leg. Yeah.
That's all they do. Around. They kick you in the leg, and I bash them in the skull, and then they do like a little into my leg, and then my guy's dead. It's pretty cool. Gearing up for Out of the Park Baseball 19 coming out. Putting a lot of work behind the scenes on that. And this week just kicked off season 3 of Bullpen Banter over on twitch.tv/thatsportsgamer.
Wow, you have seasons? Wow.
I mean, this year I decided to call it season 3.
Sweet.
Just because I was like, we're up to 69 or 70. I was like, season 3 sounds nicer.
That's cool. This is like season 8 of the Press Row podcast.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, it's the best part of about being a content creator. You just get to say, season? Sure, we have seasons.
Season
done.
16.
There you go.
Each season is like 8 episodes long.
Evolution 3, season 8 of the Press Row podcast.
we're in uncharted territory.
The British model of television where it's each season is like 3 or 4 episodes.
Hey, if you haven't watched The Queen yet, I highly recommend it.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about The Crown or something else?
The Crown. Is it The Crown? Yes,
yeah.
The Crown.
Yeah, Crown is great.
I also think The Queen was something, and I think it was good, too, so probably check that out, too.
Either one. Either recommendation comes straight from TJ. That's great. That's great. So let's talk some baseball, TJ and Rich, which it's sport you both are intimate with, you both work with.
Yep.
But we got MLB The Show. Which just kind of started its promotional campaign. And this is something that's a little unusual. We typically would get the first news on MLB The Show in early December with like a teaser trailer. Instead, they bumped that teaser trailer, essentially what we would have gotten then to now. The teaser trailer didn't show a whole lot, but it did have some new legends in it. We got the schedule ahead, because look, if they're not starting until now, that means the next 6 weeks are going to be jam-packed with info and videos and live streams. So it's a lot of good stuff to come for people who are excited for MLB The Show. And they started that this week, got their first live stream going today. I don't think they released a blog along with it, so what they got into was gameplay and AI, but they didn't really list out so much of what they had in that area, but they did mention a few things like changes to the hitting engine, an all-new tagging engine, and new catcher animations. These things are not necessarily going to blow people away. It's not back-of-the-box features, but I think, TJ, that these are important things because they're addressing areas that were maybe exploited online, areas that maybe led to some frustration as far as hitting goes, with people struggling with that in recent years. So tell me, TJ, based on the live stream, based on what you've learned so far, what are the biggest takeaways so far for MLB The Show 18?
Yeah, so it seems the biggest stuff is definitely some of the new tagging stuff. They completely rewrote the engine. They had the guy that did the base running engine now write the tagging engine, so they all kind of line up. So there's different tags for, like, if a guy's running, if a guy's standing still, or if he's sliding, or if you're chasing him, or if he's running to you. So they showed some of that off today in the stream, and it looks a lot smoother. And like actually you're making the tag that you want to make. Like there was a lot of times last year where you would just see a guy whiff on a tag and for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be cleared up a lot. And they also fixed some of the slides. I don't know if you ever had, we were sending your guy home and he would do a head first slide. And instead of keeping his left arm straight and touching the plate, he would like pull it back and he would like pull it back a little bit. And he would always get called out because he would always pull it back and get tagged. So they fixed that. And a bunch of other stuff. Like, specifically, they added a whole bunch of new branching animations in the throws and stuff. So a big thing that people would do online was if you have first and third, send your guy to second. And if you throw down, there's literally no way to get the guy back at home because the whoever was covering second base just didn't know what to do. And they'd get into, like, they'd catch the ball, pause, get into their throwing motion, and then throw home. And if your guy was coming home, he was going to score easily. So stuff like that. Same with, like, first to third. Now you shouldn't be able to just, if you're on first and there's, like, a little weak grounder, you shouldn't just be able to go first to third or second to home. The fielder should be a lot more responsive in being able to make throws to other bases and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I seem to remember, and I think that that goes to the catchers also. Is that animation related? If I'm remembering back well enough, it was. There were some times where you'd pick up the ball and they'd either just lollygag it or make some kind of, you know, or pull their arm back slowly or whatever it is, and you're sitting there and you're like, no, we need urgency. Get the ball out. Yeah.
That was something they hit upon a lot in the stream today, was the fielders now have the urgency to make the throws and stuff. It looked like in the past, what the players would do is they would be into a catch animation and then go to like a set position and then go into their throw animation. And now that's all supposed to be a lot more fluid and not happening, not getting herky jerky as much. Mm-hmm. Specifically stuff with like the catcher, where he's going to be able to pop out of the stands quicker, pick up the ball in a smoother fashion and throw down a first, all in one fluid looking movement rather than like three or four herky jerky ones last year. And they said one of the things with the those like lob throws down to the bases would be like when the guy's not covering the bag in time. So if you're throwing from like the catcher to the first base and the first baseman's not at the bag, the catcher would just lob it over and you would never have any luck with the throw. Now it seems like the catcher's just going to gun it to the bag and the first baseman's job is to get there.
What so it mentions hitting engine changes, and I know that was part also of the alpha or the beta, I forget which it was, that they that the show had a little while back. Hitting engine changes, what exactly does what does that mean? Because a lot of times you'll hear things about it's a new engine or we've changed this, but how is that going to affect people when they just pick up the game and play? What are they going to see that's different?
Well, it seems like the main thing that they fixed from last year was that the opposite field power is going to be down a lot more this year.
Oh, what about the late swing? Is that part of late and opposite that's field?
All, yeah, that's all part of that. I guess the problem was that they weren't like discounting if a guy has a certain amount of power, he's going to hit the same power to left center and right center. But now it seems like to the opposite field, he's not going to have as much power as before. And the swing timing is going to be more tuned to pull, trying to pull balls. And they were showing off some stuff where I guess they've redone things like the atmospheric pressure and the like. So they had one clip of Aaron Judge like hitting a ball to left center field in real life. And they put like all the exact same exit velocity and exit velocity and launch angle and everything. And when they did it, it went exactly to the same spot, like off a couple of feet from where it was in real life.
Any surprises, or actually, if not surprises, what about the legends? Because I know the trailer revealed a couple, including Babe Ruth. What have you noticed? Because obviously it's a big deal for Diamond Dynasty. You can use those guys in franchise mode, but where they're really the most valuable and where most people spend their time with them is looking to acquire them for their teams in Diamond Dynasty. What are you excited about there as far as the legends go?
Well, it's cool that they got Babe Ruth. He's probably like the biggest name that they could have got for this other than, you know, Ken Griffey Jr., who they got last year. Babe Ruth kind of encompasses everybody. It's going to be really interesting to see how they use him with his ability to pitch and hit, because there were seasons where he was pitching and hitting at the same time. Assume there will be some cards that are just pitchers and some cards that are just hitters.
Yeah, I was going to say they should be planning for that also with Ohtani, right?
Yeah,
him and Babe Ruth. Essentially, they could put some system into place which allows you to play them in the field and pitch.
I just wonder how they're going to handle that with, like in Diamond Dynasty,
right?
If you have Babe Ruth in right field and then he's going to pitch, you need to put a new right fielder in somehow. Or do you have to pick if he's a starting pitcher, which would kind of suck because you only have a 1 in 5 chance of getting him.
Oh, yeah. So. I was thinking DH. There's no DH in Diamond Dynasty yet, right? So,
right.
So maybe it doesn't play as much of a role there, but within
but
a franchise
even if you DH
mode,
him,
yeah.
Yeah, well, if you DH him, then he would just hit for in the DH spot. But then you would lose the DH spot if you took him out of the game because he was pitching bad.
Yeah. It's a lot of things for them to consider anyways. Yeah. I think they announced, was Vladimir Guerrero they announced today?
Yeah, tonight was Vladimir Guerrero. And they're going to, every stream this year that they do in the next, 6 weeks, is going to be a new legend to the game.
So what do you see in the schedule coming up that piques your interest the most, TJ? We got their Little Things stream next week. There's presentation and commentary improvements, including it looks like a new person's going to be joining the commentary booth. There's Diamond Dynasty talking about new programs, the way the programs are handled. Road to the Show, they're getting rid of training points. In franchise mode, I'm guessing they've redacted what's most interesting about that, because it just looks like some throw-in things. Trade deadline prep and September call-ups. Hopefully something a little more substantial there for franchise. But what are you most looking forward to them getting to here?
Well, obviously Diamond Dynasty, because that's what I play the most. But they don't have one specifically for online franchise.
Yeah.
Which is the thing that I really want them to work on and make great, because what they have there is okay, but not great. I think the only good thing about the developer blog and schedule they have out now, it looks like the asterisks actually mean something. Because mm-hmm. There's going to be 7 streams, and they're all going to have new legends, so 7 new legends fits in the asterisks there. I believe it was on the day that they launched the trailer, there was also like 18 to 20 minute videos that Ramon was on with IGN and GameSpot, and he mentioned something called phases for franchise mode. I assume that's what the stars are there. Mm. A lot of talk about who the new person joining the booth is going to be. My guess, based on the asterisks and having new legends, I'm thinking Jim Tomei. I think he just started working with MLB Network.
That makes sense then. I was going to say, yeah. Does he have experience there? I don't remember him calling games, but...
Yeah, I don't know. But...
I mean, how many people would that give him in the booth for? Or is this going to be like a on-the-field reporter?
Yeah, I would assume it would be something like that, just to chime in every now and then. Because mm-hmm. What do they have now? They have the main guy, they have Reynolds, they have Plesak. So I would assume it's just little small stuff. And Plesak did a lot of stuff for... a lot of his chime-ins were pitching-related. Right. So having a power hitter like Jim Tomei would be... an interesting perspective.
Yeah, compliment it, yeah.
Harold Reynolds, not the greatest power hitter in the world.
No, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, the big thing today was a lot of those animations just make the game look a lot more realistic to what you see when you're actually watching a game of baseball. So it was really interesting.
I'm excited about MLB The Show. I love baseball history. Babe Ruth, Vladimir Guerrero, awesome. Hopefully, it says, you know, you can play him out of the box. That'll be fun. I'm hoping that this is a year where I can hit. A couple, 2-3 years ago, I was okay at hitting. Last year, really struggled. And I'm hoping this year I don't have to revert to sort of being pitching heavy. That's my only concern is that this will be a non-hitting year again, because last year, could not hit.
Was that, TJ, was that some feedback that they got that people just struggled with the hitting last year?
I don't know, because a lot of people struggled, but then a lot of people were complaining that it was too overpowered, like specifically the opposite field power and stuff like that.
Right,
so,
I guess it depends on the circumstances.
Yeah, now they're adding new swing analysis. So you can actually like see where the ball is crossing the plate when you're swinging, like from over the top of you. That's supposed to be accurate, so you should be understanding your timing a little bit better because of that this year.
Well, I mean, I understand hitting is difficult, right? It's not just that, but also the other thing is I'm interested to see how they accommodate for how dramatically baseball changed last year. There were more strikeouts and more home runs last year than any other year before. That's a pretty fundamental change. Is the game going to reflect that? I'm very interested to see.
Yeah, they talked for a second about how people were frustrated with a lot of people getting into two strike counts and then just fouling balls off repeatedly. And hopefully that's going to go down this year. But they didn't really get into specifics on how that was actually going to happen. So,
yeah. Can you imagine the complexity of that kind of stuff? I mean, the tweaks and adjustments and phew, man, so, so crazy how much work goes into something like that.
Yep. All right, well, I think that'll do it for this week. I think maybe TJ will have you on each week just to do a little the show corner or something, the hot corner. I don't know, something with
you
TJ.
Call, You can call it Bullhorn Banter and just watch my stream, or, you know, subscribe to the podcast. Either of those two.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that.
Maybe I'll save like one hot tip for you guys.
Ooh, I like it. I like it a lot.
That sounds good. Yeah. So we got weeks and weeks ahead of us where we get new stuff for the show. So along with whatever else we have for the podcast, we'll probably visit what's new with the show in each episode coming up then. So thank you, TJ Lowerman, That Sports Gamer. Thank you, Rich Grisham, Out of the Park Developments, Hit the Pass. I'm Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Press Row Podcast. Take care till then.